Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Character Reveal. You know the spiel. We're here to talk to people and have a good old time. As always, I'm your host, Brother Dom, aka Just Dom. I'm joined, as always, with my lovely co-host, Stephanie. How are you doing today, Steph?
I'm doing pretty decent. How are you?
I'm tired and I have, I'm all right. It's whatever. So, per the normal, we have another guest, a great guest, someone I've known through the internet for a while. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Joseph, aka The Oracle, aka Bay Grylls, aka that guy that is going to steal your girl next week, aka... No, I'm just kidding. That's not my... No, that's at all. That was highly, highly, highly beyond my station. But yes, hi everybody. Nice to meet you.
Hey, how you doing today, man?
You know, I'm okay. It's been a long week, but I've got a trip to Poland to look forward to on Wednesday, so it's not all bad. So I'm just going to take the I'm just going to take the weekend to rest up.
Yeah. Sounds good. So, I guess we can just jump into it. You are probably our first guest from another, like a pretty far away area. We've had Canada, but mostly Pittsburgh. So, Congratulations on being the first from the lovely place of Europe.
Oh, I don't know how Donald Trump's going to feel about that. Good grief.
We're starting right now. You know, we're knocking the borders down. We're having international phone conversations.
Excellent.
Beyond just our northern border. So, we're pretty much just breaking it all down right now.
That's good. No, it needs to happen because if he gets into office, boy, it's going to be wrapped up quick.
We have a lot of opinions over here, and I don't really know. No one really knows what's going to happen, so...
Yeah, we're terrified.
Just a little bit.
I've been really angsty over the whole election process at this point. For beyond feeling good or bad about your candidates, I wish you couldn't announce your candidacy so far in advance, because I'm not sure who's running around, who's not sure who they want to vote for. So it's pretty much just this waiting game of, okay, so can we all just vote now? Like, nope, gotta wait till November. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll see what happens then. But I'm pretty sure people are everyone knows by now. But Joseph, what are the cool things that you do? Like, what makes you the awesome guy that you are?
Well, the awesome bit is definitely a question of subjectivity, but thank you very much. I am, first and foremost, I am a... Oh God, I don't even know where to begin. Let's start with the basics. I am a professional computer nerd, which is just a very nice, sweet way of saying that I work in IT. I've been working in IT for about 9 years now.
Nice.
When I'm not doing that and fixing all the things that people break, because someone's got to do it, I am a musician. When I am in a band, a melodic hardcore band, similar to that of Rise Against and a Wilhelm Scream, we're called Ships Down. I auditioned for them last year in November, and they offered me the slot, and we've been doing it ever since. We've done about 5 shows now, and the anticipation and the word is starting to spread, so we'll be performing again in London on the 23rd. When I'm not in the band, I also do some side projects, mainly around electronic hip-hop and R&B soul kind of music. I also perform out in Bath every other month. I think it's gone this year so far. But we do a lot of our own blues, Motown, and all sorts of different covers, and it's a lot of fun playing there. Play at a place called The Nest, which is an incredible little venue. They have a basement area, so we can make as much noise as we want until about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Nice.
So it is live in there. It really goes off, and it is just such a pleasure and a privilege to play with guys that I know, guys that I love, and also that are incredible musicians themselves. So it's really, really fun. When I'm not doing the music thing, cool. There is a bit of activism that I do as well, but I try and incorporate that in my writing, which is the other thing that I do. I am a columnist for Media Diversified. I have also written, and I'm also done some volunteer work for mental health through a charity out here, or non-profit as they are now known, called Campaign Against Living Miserably, which deals usually with the disparity between men and mental health, why we don't talk about it, how we can try and dismantle some of the things of traditional masculinity, how we can get more men to be open about the way that we feel, because we aren't comic book heroes, we are human beings first and foremost. So it's very important to me as somebody who has dealt with depression since my early teenage years. It's not just a political thing, it's a personal thing. So I pretty much ride all the way to the tires fall off with them.
Cool.
I'm actually going to be running in the London 10K for the fourth year in a row, not this Sunday, but next Sunday, and that's immediately after get back from Poland, so that should be a lot of fun.
Man, there is a lot going on there, man. You are really running the gamut on that.
Yeah, it's just go out there and go and get it. That's just how I've always felt about it. Yeah. So
I think that's the thing that surprised me the most, just from seeing your body work so far, is that I met you doing a video game remix on a rap song.
Yes.
And then I was like, what else does this guy do? You're like, oh, you know, hardcore as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a lot of diversity just within your musical work before we even get to all the other things you mentioned. It's I'm really taken aback by all that. So
I've always been the type of person that has always believed that if we're talking, because the thing that always staggers certain people is that I've always grown up and gone to schools. That's something I also need to perfect. It's not just here that all this has been done. I'm very much a transatlantic kid. I have been back and forth over the Atlantic since the age of 2. I've lived in Florida and New York City. I've visited many places up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and I've gone as far west as Alabama. But I wouldn't recommend going back to Alabama. No disrespect, but it's just not my scene, for obvious reasons. Anyway, the major thing that people always pick up on is just like, oh, I didn't know that you did that, or oh, I didn't know that, and all that sort of stuff. But when I look around at, you know, other people who share the same amount of glorious melanin in my skin, I'm just like, but haven't we been doing this for ages? Like, why isn't anybody talking about this? That's the only thing that I've always kind of wondered and realized is, you know, there's no real lanes that I can kind of fit into, apart from the ones that are extremely obvious. Like, obviously you wouldn't see me you know, jumping up and down on a bandwagon for something that I didn't know about or even cared about. I wouldn't sell a product that I wouldn't buy and things of that nature. But when it comes to my creative and otherwise other sort of exploits, it's always just been a case of, well, I know I can do this because I have done it, so I just go out there and get it done, essentially.
Okay. You do mention going back and forth over the Atlantic. Are you from the London area, or are you from over here and went over there?
Yes, born in a place called Sutton, which is in southeast London, southwest London, excuse me. And then I lived in Mitcham, and I went to a primary school in Enfield. Then we, at some point, the green cards came through. So then we, after doing a stint in New York and then coming back, we then went to Florida, which is where I've been moving around ever since. It's been Orlando, Oviedo, Melbourne. I've lived in all those areas, and it was actually my grandmum that paved the way, really. She became a dual national because she came over to the United States when there was a lot of demand for nurses. And she was a nurse, and she and then, you know, kind of the rest is history. So my dad got infatuated with the American dream and decided to drag us kicking and screaming. and, you know, we've just been moving around ever since. We've been a very nomadic. And it really, it's even up until the point where my mum and dad divorced, and I think I was about 14 when they've divorced. But we moved around a lot. Sometimes out of necessity, sometimes because we got sick and tired of the area that we were living in. But it's just something that we've always known. Travel has always been a part of my life. I don't really consider myself to be somebody that's from somewhere apart from that being a point of origin. I'm from a certain place, but I've been dropped into the deep end of so many different cultures. It's ridiculous. So,
okay. Kind of keeps you on your feet, kind of makes you more worldly, I think is the cliche way to say it.
I think so. And the other way I look at it is that it is a privilege, but it does come with some microaggressions that I would rather not deal with, but such is the way of the world, so you just got to try and make as much sense of it as possible and just be as educated about it as possible and just be prepared to handle it, really. You just got to handle it.
Do you tend to see more microaggression kind of stuff happening over in London or over here? Or
I don't think it's a case of more, and that's something that when I was younger, I'd always said that America was a bit more brutal than the States. Given what's been happening over the last, I want to say 10, 15 years. And I dare say probably all my life, but I wasn't really made that much more hyper aware of it until I got older. I would say that there really and truly isn't a worse. The one thing that we don't have to deal with here as much as you do in the States is the whole police officers killing people with impunity. That's something that we really and truly don't have to deal with at such a disproportionate fashion, but we do have to deal with it. They won't pull a gun on us in the street. Well, they did for one person. His name is Mark Duggan. But they won't be so quick to pull the trigger. Rather, they will basically, you'll die in captivity. That's what was more likely to happen to us over here. And that's the caveat. So whereas in America, you basically get both. They just basically arrest you and it's like, right, well, do you want to die now or do you want to die maybe later? Or, you know, perhaps maybe we can kill you and make it look like an accident. What would you prefer? You haven't done anything well, wrong, you know, by the way. That kind of thing.
You know, America is the land of choice. So we try to give people alternatives, you know.
Indeed.
It's not about the destination, it's about the journey.
No, and exactly. That's it.
Yeah, that got kind of dark, but
yeah. Wow, I'm just like, what's happening?
So it's like, I'm not part of this combo, not tonight.
Well, that's something that we do try to keep. We do have a, just here on character reveal, we don't have a necessary intersectionality between the two of us, but we do have different angles from it, and I think that makes it not perfectly balanced, but we just can come at it from different angles. I'm still learning. I think we all are still learning about all that kind of thing. Like, I can speak through experience a lot on race. And I can speak as somebody who cares about gender disparity, but I can't really speak from that. I can't speak from that point of view.
You know? That's it. And that's where the whole beauty of intersectionality comes in. Shout out to Kimberly Crenshaw, who is the genius behind that. Some of the stuff that I've read from her is just incredible. It really is. But it definitely opens up a world to it, and it makes you realize that for as long as you're alive, there will always be something that you don't know and you can't truly experience. You might be able to know about it from an academic standpoint, but some things are best explained from a lived experience point of view. So
exactly. And it's you know, I always appreciate trying to be aware of the things that you can't experience, but just knowing that they're there and not throwing a temper tantrum when someone calls you on it.
Definitely.
Like, I didn't want to be an Ashy Larry after Jesse Williams called out black dudes last weekend. So a lot of people were not pleased with that. Like, yo, this light-skinned brother.
Yeah.
He's just mad because...
Yeah.
So that was a thing all week. That was a nice little way of people exposing themselves.
Just a little bit. It's just like, we should probably have kept the shade butter on deck. It's just like, as soon as they started to throw their toys out, the parents like, well, we know which guys need a warm blanket and a bottle of milk. So
it's just, here's the thing. It would have been just so easy to be like, I get the inclination to be a hater, to be jealous. Like, I'm jealous of the dude's rich. People happy for him, got a lot of good gigs, but
certainly
I focus that jealousy as far as well, what can I do to be better? You know, people got mad that he getting all this attention from women. They wanted to also have that attention, so they figured instead of trying to be better and like him, I'll just try to tear him down. It's like, well, that's going to be a lot harder, man, and you're also exposing yourself on that.
That brings up an interesting point, which is something that and I know I'm the one being asked all the questions, but Stephanie, from your perspective, what do you make of it when you see men get so insecure about the attention another man receives from somebody of the opposite sex? What do you make of that? Is it just something that you think is wholly pathetic? Do you think there's some merit to it? What?
I think it comes off as so childish to me. Like, I just, it doesn't, I think jealousy is very unattractive. So if, whether you're being jealous of some, like, if we're in a relationship and you're being super jealous and possessive of me, or if you're being jealous and possessive of my attraction to someone else, if we're not in a relationship, it just, it just rubs me the wrong way.
No, I completely.
And I really, I really agree with what Dom is saying. That if I am going for someone who I think is better than you, instead of tearing him down, try to make yourself better.
And that's the common denominator every time, I think, because this is something that I think Dom will probably agree with me on. Can't speak for him, but whenever I'm whenever I'm in the midst of other men and I see how they're always constantly trying to one-up each other, it starts subtle at first, but then it becomes so brutally obvious that it just, it then kind of makes everybody feel uncomfortable, because I don't see how that can be flattering when you've got two dudes basically squabbling over trying to make themselves seem more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Just better, more
More tough. More appealing. There we go. They're trying to make themselves seem more appealing so that they can, you know, get one up on who's supposedly their boy or their friend or anything like that. It just, to me, it just seems like I don't really see why we continue to do that when all it really comes off as is that they're just basically competing over what essentially makes a woman out to be a trophy of some sort. And there's the
classic example from all the cartoons, you know, it's, they're like those old Disney cartoons and, you know, Pete's trying to be a hard ass or some other mouse. And Mickey's like, well, I'm going to be better than you so that Minnie will love me. And then she's like, so you think I'm a trophy? And he just has this dumb look on his face like, oh, shit. That's what I
mean. Exactly.
I mean, I feel like it really comes down to that. Like, if you're doing battle with another guy to win a woman, then you're making the woman the thing, like a thing that you're fighting over.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're getting at.
Yeah, it's just a bad route. It always throws me off when I'm walking down the street or something, and I like to consider myself a pretty good looking person, and if anyone says otherwise, you're wrong. I walk down the street and I'll see a nice lady and a gentleman walking by, you know, because this only seems to happen in heteronormative relationships, and the guy will see me and I'm just kind of looking at these two people because, you know, I make sure I'm aware of the people around me, and he'll make sure to like grab his girlfriend's waist or something, or like a really strong handhold. Like, bro, I'm not going to try to steal your girlfriend literally on the street. That's a ridiculous concept.
It really is.
And how little faith do you have in yourself? You know,
not even just that, but while we're here, the whole steal your significant other thing makes me laugh because of how ridiculous it is. Human beings aren't, you know, easily led. They go where they want to. So if they, you know, and they also do what they want to, you know, whether they consider the consequences of their actions is a whole nother matter entirely. But,
for sure.
But human beings do what they want. And, you know, for people to be like, oh, you stole my girlfriend. No, your girlfriend...
Your girlfriend has free will,
dude. It is a thing. And unfortunately for you, she decided that you were not it anymore. So it is...
You weren't worth wasting life over, essentially.
Exactly. Just, you know, sometimes you just have to... Like, I listened to a podcast called The Read, which has Kid Fury and Crystal. Amazing podcast. And they get letters in from people and they're trying to say, how can I put it in a nice way? And every single time they say, honestly, sometimes it just is that, so you just need to say it. So yeah, I really don't feel like, you know, I really don't feel like you're flattering your significant other by saying, you know, by getting all super jealous and possessive, because that only goes to show how much you don't trust your partner. And if you don't trust your partner,
that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, if you don't trust your partner, what the bloody hell are you doing in the relationship in the first place? It just doesn't make any sense. No sense at all.
Playing games, just playing games, apparently.
Just trying to hedge bets. But yeah, no.
Yes, there it is.
Jesse Williams, excellent speech at the BET Awards, and it was on time. It really was on time.
That's, I think, the biggest thing from it is I had a conversation with a friend. And we were saying the things he was saying wasn't burning the world on fire with what he was saying, in the sense that these weren't revolutionary ideas. Mm-mm. And that was the depressing part, is that these aren't revolutionary ideas and they still need to be said. It was timely, and I respect what he said. And when I was watching the speech, you know, I was getting the goosebumps. I was doing fist pumps in my head. You know, I was watching it the next morning. But I think it's the depressing part is that's where the discourse is. I think I heard somebody said on a podcast, it's upsetting that that's all the further we are, that was what was necessary. Because I think, you know, say we're further along, he still would have said the right things and great speech, but it's kind of depressing to say, like, it shouldn't be controversial to say, use our money for good. Mm-hmm. We should respect our women. Mm-hmm. Stop killing us in the street. These shouldn't be groundbreaking ideas, but unfortunately they are.
Yeah, no, they are still something that people get all shocked about. And I can't really understand why. But then again, I was watching something the other day. I don't know if you're familiar with people on YouTube called What Culture. They have quite good videos on YouTube. They do like top 10 lists and stuff like that. So they talk about, you know, film, and they talk about wrestling, which I am a massive, massive wrestling nerd. I really do like wrestling. It is very entertaining. Some people like watching The Young and the Restless. I like watching Monday Night Raw. That's true.
Hey, to each their own.
Yeah.
I like seeing some moves.
I used to be a big Monday Night Raw fan when I was a kid. I don't watch it anymore, but my whole family would gather around.
Okay, so new adventures in podcasting. We had a power cut, but no problem. You all won't even know because of editing, except I just told you.
Cat's out of the bag, guys.
You found the cat. So, over in London, so you said you had a brownout. Is there a storm going on, or is it something else?
No, I don't know. Probably just some funny business going on in these houses. Have to remember that a lot of London's infrastructure is extremely, extremely old. Like, there aren't a lot of modern buildings. I think the most modern building that we have will probably be a skyscraper. It's called the Shard. And that was only just recently finished. But only rich people either live or do business in there. So there you go. And then there's the Gherkin, that was only recently built not too long ago. There's the O2, which is in like an American style arena, so anywhere that you would expect a basketball game or something like that to go down, that's what we have. Nice. And the NBA have pretty much made themselves feel at home here. They're here every year. My favorite basketball team, the Orlando Magic, were here earlier. I think they were here early this year or late last year, and I didn't know until on the night, and I was like, oh, tickets.
That's a little too late. Are you a fan of any American sports to any degree other than basketball?
Yes. I do like ice hockey. I think ice hockey is an incredible sport, and I'm a big-time Tampa Bay Lightning fan. We will not talk about what the Penguins did. I don't want to talk about it.
You are in the wrong... Well, we're both Pittsburgh people, so this is the wrong spot for that.
Congratulations.
Hey, thanks. Thank you.
My sister's boyfriend is from Tampa, and he's very bitter.
Yeah, we're not taking it well. We should have had it wrapped up in six, but there you go. These things happen.
Hey, well, you guys are much better than San Jose. Like, the Lightning, everyone in Pittsburgh was on the edge of our seats for that, but then the Sharks came in. It was like, oh, okay, well, this just seems to be a formality, so... whatever.
Pretty much. But then again, knowing the San Jose Sharks record, and to all San Jose Sharks fans, you know what I'm about to say here. The choke always comes through in the end with them. And it's, they've spent so many years trying to get to the Stanley Cup final that when they finally did it, they thought they won the thing, and they didn't. So
hey, I mean, so over in Pittsburgh, we have the Pirates, who has, before a couple years ago, had a losing season of 21 years. So just the first time they had a winning season, we're like, World Series, that's good enough for us. We don't got to make it to playoffs. We got over 500. Celebrate. And people are like, what about playoffs? I'm like, who cares about playoffs?
Exactly. You got to, sometimes I like that in certain, for certain sports teams. It's the, just the, when they celebrate the fact that they're not crap anymore. That is, that's just really, that's a really good feeling. You see people partying and all that sort of stuff. It's like, did we win something? Nope, we're just not shit anymore. Oh, okay, great.
That's what's, it's funny in Cleveland, the, they finally won a championship in any sport with LeBron over there, and that city had no idea how to act. And the rest of the country was like, no, no, please be as crazy as you need to.
Yeah, this is celebrate, deserved. Man.
It's a big deal. So I did manage to take in the highlights of the game after it happened, because there was something else that was very important that was on that night, and it was the Game of Thrones episode, the one before that had to take precedence. I make no apologies for that. Like, you know, plus the Magic weren't playing in the finals, so it's not like I was going to watch it live. I mean, good grief.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, well, that's the thing. You know, it's sports are happening. You want to watch sports as live as you can, but like, it's going to happen regardless. Versus Game of Thrones, I don't watch it, but if I did, the spoilers that happen, you literally can't go on Twitter, and
can't do
I
it.
I mean, you could put like the. Yeah, you got to put the game on like in a little corner or something. Like Game of Thrones takes precedent.
It's got to. So yes, I do like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's interesting though. After they won the Super Bowl, which and I have a very, very close friend that can attest to this. I predicted the season before they won it that they were going to win it, and I pretty much almost got laughed out of high school. But then they won, and all of a sudden, I couldn't find anybody that was laughing at me anymore. So it was a really, really good feeling. But
hey, where's everybody at? Where'd you guys go?
You guys got all quiet on me. What's going on? It's not like we won the Super Bowl. And I remember my brother, who is a big time Oakland Raiders fan.
Sorry for him.
Yes, but I refuse not to this day to let him live it down, and he knows every single time we get to talking about football, I'm going to remind him about what happened in the year 2004 when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers shut everybody up, and it was so beautiful. It was brilliant.
That's hilarious.
It's fantastic.
I think the Steelers won it the next year. I'm bad at sports, but it just feels like 2005 was. I feel like, cause I was just in high school, so I don't know. They have some rings in my lifetime, so I'm happy with that. So we got sports, we got activism.
Yes.
We talked about race. We're killing it with the having nerd stuff and other stuff. But we haven't talked about any nerd things other than the mention of Game of Thrones. Now, I know you're at least a little bit of a Sonic fan, but to prevent Stephanie from being bored, because we've had a lot of video game episodes in a row. Or just a lot of focus around it. Let's shift it ever so slightly.
Sure.
Maybe we come back from two. Are you a nerd for any other things?
I am. I am indeed. I love certain, well, graphic novels. Graphic novels are huge for me. Like, I'm currently reading the first volume of the deluxe edition of a graphic novel called Revival. It's by Tim Seeley, and I think it's illustrated by Mike Norton. Might be the other way around.
Oh.
But basically, it's about a small town in Wisconsin? Is it Wisconsin or Minnesota? One of those states where nothing happens. Anyway.
Both of those states.
One of them, anyway. But something happens one day where people who die come back to life. Now, I'm not talking about your Walking Dead, Left 4 Dead, Resident Evil savoir faire here. I'm talking about they actually come back to life as if they never died in the first place.
Interesting.
That's what makes this extremely interesting. is the fact that now it's become not just national attention in terms of the United States, but also international attention. The CDC is all over it. The UN is all over it. Basically descending upon this really small podunk town in Wisconsin, Soto, or wherever it is, that nothing happens there. But all of a sudden, they are front and center on the world stage. And the religious fundamentals come out of the Lord work. The bloody, you know, the superstitious come out of the woodwork. People who believe in aliens come out in the woodwork and all that sort of stuff. And not giving the game away, but the very latter one that I just mentioned might have a point, but you need to read the graphic novel to really get into it. It's brutal, it's personal, it's unrelenting, it's fantastic. And another graphic novel that I love is Saga. Saga is incredible stuff. Ugh.
It's so good.
So good. When I tell you that Saga is fantastic, I mean it. It is just excellent. And the only complaint that I have is that I've had to wait longer for each volume to come out. And I'm getting increasingly impatient. It's like waiting 3 years for another series of Game of Thrones. That's where we are with it. But Saga's incredible.
It's really good. Yeah, it kind of feels like waiting for a Kingdom Hearts game to come out with a real number on it. Won't get into that. Still bitter.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go on, Steph.
The worst thing about Saga is that I could subscribe to the single issues if I wanted to. Like, I could just get them from my comic shop and know what was going on. But I have the first five in the trade paperbacks. Mm-hmm. And I'm just being snooty about wanting to have the same thing all the way across. And it's just like, you could know. You didn't have to wait this long.
Nope, can't do it.
I can't do it.
Because the problem is...
It comes out in like a week.
Yes, it does. The next one does come out. And Amazon has reminded me, so shout out to Amazon for reminding me. I appreciate that. But the thing about it is that when you start reading... When you read Volume 1... You don't go back to the single comics after that because it's basically as if you've taken in a good 90-minute film that was just incredible. And it's also, if I'm going to make another parallel, it's like binge watching a season of your favorite series. So if you watch a whole season, you don't want to wait for episode by episode by episode. Because then you just...
Yeah, it just feels awkward. Yes,
because then you're just like, well, what happens? I need to know. I can't go to work tomorrow. You need to tell me what happens right now. That kind of thing. So it's... Saga's amazing. My favorite character in it is probably Gwendolyn because she takes no shit ever and I love it. And she goes in. Secondary favorite character. I was on the ropes about him. He's still a bit of a prick, but I like King Robot the Fourth. I think he's interesting.
yeah.
I think he's interesting.
I have got to get into this. I've heard so much about it, and I have not picked any of it up. I've got to get on the bandwagon.
No, it's really good. It's basically a tale of two... Well, a planet and it's a nearby moon. And they have been at war for ever, really. And essentially there are two people on either side of that battle that fall in love with each other whilst serving in the war, but then decide to go AWOL and basically run off, and they've been on the run ever since. Things get more interesting when they have a kid together. Now, this is the interesting angle for Saga. Human beings outside of in real life, you know, interracial relationships can be a bit of a sensitive topic here. In Saga, they've actually gone interspecies with it. So it's something that neither the planet or the moon, even though they're at war, can agree with. And I think it's probably exacerbated the tensions of said war. And the adventures and stuff that they go on are just epic. That's the only real thing the word that comes to mind for it. And I'm sure Stephanie knows exactly what I'm talking about, but you definitely need to get on it, Dom. It's a fantastic graphic novel. It's so good. Oh my God.
I actually read something when I first picked it up because I picked up the first one and I started reading it and I didn't put it down until I was done with it. I was like waiting in the car to go into something and I was late because I couldn't put it down. And I read something later is that the creators, Brian Vaughn and Fiona Staples, decided to make it as epic and just on such a huge scale that it could never be adapted for film or television because they just didn't want, they wanted it to be solely a graphic novel experience. They didn't want anyone else adapting their baby.
No.
That's probably for the better. So many things get adapted poorly.
It is. And that's not going to stop Hollywood from trying. Because Hollywood gone to Hollywood every single time, but
absolutely
true.
Same.
One can only hope that they like have a just such an extreme failure because that's the only way that it could be charming in its own right. You know, like they're not going to get it perfect. I think a near perfect, not near perfect, but a passable would just be a disappointment because you're like you were so close. But if they just flub it completely, that could at least have like Rotten Tomato value.
It could do. I mean, it worked for Batman versus Superman, so I guess anything is possible.
So I heard like the cut 30 minutes from that are actually like someone. I think I saw a tweet and someone's like, "Who thought it was a good idea to cut these 30 minutes? Like they were, they don't make it good, but they make it better." which is just kind of interesting that it got chopped in the way it did. I didn't see it because it didn't even look fun in the trailers to me.
No, I've seen the film. I think it was catastrophically bad, and Zack Snyder is the worst film that's come out this year, and that's no exaggeration. Zack Snyder got his comeuppance finally. I just think if Zack Snyder actually wanted to understand Superman, we would have gotten a better film out of it. We would have. But Zack Snyder he's always been more visionary than substance, so. And that showed from the very first film that it came out of the gates with, which was 300. It really wasn't telling the story, or the you know the fabled story of that battle. All the three.
It was just like a nice spectacle.
It was just a nice spectacle. A whole bunch of ripped dudes and slow motion sex scenes. That's pretty much it.
He made Sucker Punch too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, which is only worthwhile for the spectacle. Every bit of the story is trash.
Yeah,
it doesn't even make sense. Like
Stephanie's on point.
It seems like. It seems like when you have that one friend who thinks he's a lot smarter than he is, he's like, it's this movie that's like, you're not sure if it's in a dream, if it's real, and like, she dances, but when she dances, it goes like into a battle scene. You're like, okay, buddy, like, I guess that could be cool. And then you make it, like, you miss the mark, man. Like, what time period is any of this in? And while you're watching it, you're like, these are cool fight scenes, but what's going on? And you're like, I want to see this dance. Like, how good is this dance? And then you never see it, and you're like, Zach, you talk such a big game. What are you talking about here?
Zach,
did you, go ahead.
No, I was about to say, Zach is that dude, bro, that was, always thought that he was a better artist than all the rest of the artists that he was surrounded by. And somebody he said to him, yes, Zach, yes, you are. Here's a whole bunch of money and a camera. Go do the things that you think that you can do. And he never really aspired to much. I mean, he is that guy. Just a dude, bro, with a shit ton of money and a camera. That's all he's.
Yeah. To flip it around completely to a movie that I did like, you saw Civil War, right?
No. And the only reason why I haven't seen it yet is because I'm waiting still. I think it's kind of safe to say that the hype around it has died a bit.
That's fair.
So. I want to be able to take this one in. And the reason why I want to take it in is because I did not like Avengers Assemble. I also didn't like Age of Ultron. And the reason why I didn't like those films is because I felt Avengers Assemble I didn't like. I liked least. Age of Ultron was okay, but it still felt a bit mediocre. Even though, once again, well, let me make my point. So, Avengers Assemble could have been a good comic book film. It could have been. If they didn't waste so much bloody time just swinging their dicks about. How many times are we going to see Tony Stark trying to get at Bruce Banner's neck? I'm smart. No, I'm smart. I'm smarter than you. No, I'm smarter than you. No, I'm going to save the world. No, I'm going to save the world. And Captain America's like, guys, 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 I'm going to save the world. And then everyone gets into a whole hubbub. Black Widow looks like someone kill me now, please. Nick Fury's got to come in and be like, guys, can we please, put our dicks away and focus on the task at hand.
So that sounds like actually a very good AU fan fiction.
Guys, can we please put our dicks away? I think I've read that fanfic.
Just, and then they repeat that ad nauseum for about 2 hours, sometimes cutting away to Loki, who's basically laughing at them all, being like, you guys are stupid. You guys are a bunch of stupid children. Really, seriously. I'm just going to sit in this room until the time is right, and then you guys are going to shoot yourself in the foot, essentially, is what's going to happen here. And
that's essentially, yeah, that was the whole plot.
And that was the film.
Yeah.
You know, CGI was CGI. It wasn't anything spectacular, so I really wasn't really into all the action scenes. But then again, when you watch films like The Dark Knight Rises, or when you watch just even The Dark Knight, where it wasn't so much CGI as it was they built sets, then they destroyed the living hell out of them and all that sort of stuff. I don't know. I think for somebody who is a real big technophile, I love technology, I love what it can do, but when it comes to action films, there's just something about the authenticity of something blowing up that you really, really enjoy. And
I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's why, one of the 3 million reasons why I can't stand Michael Bay, because he's ruined it for everybody, essentially. It's like, oh,
he made Bad Boys 2, so...
He did make Bad Boys 2, so I can't be too mad at him for that. But, I mean, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig, unfortunately. And...
I'll hesitate on the pig joke for our London friend.
David Cameron and pigs.
He's that guy.
He likes his bacon.
Stephanie, would you say that, without hyping it up too much, would you say that Civil War is probably, I consider it an Avengers movie, would you say it's much better than the other two?
I would say that yes, definitely. I actually hated Age of Ultron more than most of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies that I can think of off the top of my head. Just because I felt that it spent the entire movie making stupid mistakes and assassinating Black Widow's character. Mm. And I think that Civil War does a lot better job balancing all of its cast, and it really is an Avengers movie and not a Captain America movie. Like, they're pretty much all there.
Okay, so but... just from one melanin-infused individual to another, Joseph,
are we gonna...
I was like, yo, Black Panther, dog.
Yeah, I thought that was coming. So, no, I'm very excited.
So, I mean...
Yes. I'm very excited.
So, I don't think you'll be upset. Even if you're not super jazzed about it, I think you'll be like, yes, this is pretty cool. Mm. If nothing else, it's there. So.
Well, I mean, the thing that excites me the most now about Black Panther is, and Pacific Rim 2, which the boy John Boyega is starring in as Idris Elba's son. So shout out to John Boyega. Peckham,
so hyped.
Peckham boy. And he's really, really, really had a phenomenal 14 months. Since the moment that I saw that sneak peek trailer for, oh yes, while we're on the topic of other things that I'm annoyed about, Star Wars. I love Star Wars. I love Star Wars
let's
so
do,
much.
Let's talk.
I love Star Wars so much. Shout out to all the people that love Star Wars more than Star Trek. You are on the right side of history. I can confirm this. So,
hey.
Now, I know the Trekkies are going to get all in their feelings about it and all that sort of stuff, but I don't care. Star Wars is so good. And the fact
it's so cool.
That The Force Awakens is absolutely that film. I think I've seen it probably about 7 times now, and I've not gotten tired of it. The funny parts still make me laugh. The battle scenes still captivate me. The bit that happens to a certain person's father, that still rips like a hole in my soul. And
I think at this point you can probably
can I say it now?
Let the spoiler fly.
It's been like almost a year.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Because somebody
it's out on DVD.
Because somebody might still get mad about it. Like, they just bought the Blu-ray, about to pop it in. They'll listen to this and it'll be like, oh god damn it! So, yes.
Well, see, here's
Han Solo.
About that spoiler, So the thing that threw me off completely is, you know, I wasn't jazzed about Star Wars just because I don't know, I'm a snob or whatever. So we finally see. I was hanging out with Steph and some friends, and we woke up and we're like, "Let's go see Star Wars." So we see it, and I'm like, "Yo, this movie is so live! Like, I'm a clown for not wanting to see this movie." John Boyega was that dude, you know. Rey was killing it. Poe was killing it. Like, it was just so cool. So, like, we gotta cosplay this. So we can we do this stuff? And of course, she's like, I come through with all the stuff. So we go to a convention in January, and there's somebody dressed as Han Solo with, like, Kylo Ren's lightsaber through him.
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, bro, that movie was a month ago.
A smooth like, month this, ago.
I was like, that's too soon, and the statute of spoilers is still kind of vaguely high.
Wow. Wow.
But it's a fun little costume. But yeah, that movie was everything that I needed it to be. And a lot of people are saying, oh, well, it's just like the first one. And to which I say, I don't know. I wasn't really around for the first one in the sense that I didn't watch movies till I was 14. Mm. So even if it was a shot-for-shot remake, now you have another Star Wars fan that previously wasn't. So
this is it. I think somebody that I know said it best. I can't remember who said it. But they said that this Star Wars was not for the previous generation, it's for this one. And it was basically like a passing of the lightsaber, if you will. I get that the older heads are just like, you know, oh, it's a bit nostalgic and all that sort of stuff. Yes, and that's not really a bad thing. We still watch the original three, and we still watch... And I mean, a lot of people don't want to talk about the prequels, but I still watch them. And and this looks to be a sensational entry to the Star Wars saga. The next one is going to be dark as hell. Like, I know it's going to be dark as hell, and I can't wait for it to be dark. Because if there's anything that this one gives me the impression of, is that it's going to... Because what they're called now? What are they called now? The First Republic?
Is it
the First Republic?
Yeah, that sounds right. I don't know if it's the First Republic, but I think it's something, some kind of republic.
Something. Basically, they look to be doing all the stuff that the Empire kind of just dillied and dallied with. They look to be going all the way with the whole, you know, fucked upness of their whole dark side stuff. Like, I can't wait to see what becomes of the next battle between Kylo Ren and Rey in particular. Because Rey's gonna have her hands full trying to get, you know, Luke to, you know, to come out of his self-imposed exile and things of that nature. Meanwhile, Kylo's gonna get a bollocking from the great big mystical head.
That's the ghost
thing. Yes, that. He's gonna get a bollocking, and it's not gonna be pretty. And he's gonna get more angry, which is only gonna make him more powerful. So, I'm really looking forward to seeing what becomes of that. And while we're on that topic, I do have Finn's jacket. I have a...
Oh, yeah, you have the one, too.
As soon as I...
Yeah, I think I got...
Go ahead. No, sorry. I when I saw the film, I saw Poe Dameron wearing it, and I was like, yeah, that jacket's fresh. As soon as Finn put it on, I was like, nope, has to be copped, needs to get it right now. I was on my phone just looking to see where this jacket existed, and I found it. And
it's so good.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Do you have the one without the zipper?
I do. I have the one without the zip.
Okay.
So
I have the one with the zipper because I was like, I'm going to actually wear this a lot. And I feel like I'm the only person with the zipper, so mine still feels unique, even though it's not as accurate. Mm. That's fine by me.
No, it's fine. But I would definitely pop you the link to the ones that are made. It's a site called Film Jackets.
Oh no, I got it from the same place.
Oh, the same place.
You chose
a different one. Yeah, okay. So you know all about that life then.
Oh, I am right there. we could talk about Star Wars all day, but we have this little question section we like to throw at the end. You feeling pretty good right now?
I'm feeling lucky.
Good. Steph, cool. You feeling pretty good?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so as per tradition, if you want to pull one of these out real quick, and we can just jump right in.
Alrighty, if you could pick any crossover of anything video games and a book, TV show and a movie, anything, what would it be?
Oh, wow, that is an awesome question. I would like to see a crossover of Skyrim and Jurassic Park.
Oh, okay. And why is that?
A, I can think of nothing better than an open world, an open world atmosphere where dinosaurs roam free. There just would be nothing but total chaos and action. And I think that's what the kids need right now. That's what we all need. We need it. The streets need it. Everybody needs it.
It's the game we need and the game we deserve.
Exactly right. So Bethesda, if you're listening to this, you already know what to do. Dinosaurs. Dinosaurs.
More dinosaurs.
More dinosaurs. Thanks very much.
Cool. Very good. Very good. Another one. What's your favorite iteration of the Joker from Batman?
Ooh, these are amazing questions.
See, this is how we test the nerd cred. We're not going to like ask questions or you need to prove what you know. It's the ones that make you think. Mm-hmm.
God, it's going to be a toss up between Batman, the animated series, and The Killing Joke. Now, Batman, the animated series, I grew up watching that. And even though people, you know, Batman purists will argue that Joker was a bit watered down so that it could be, you know, subject to a more a universal audience, so to speak. Whereas The Killing Joke goes all the way there and then some, you know, definitely not for the faint of heart. I just loved how the Joker still remains the Joker in the animated series. He was still the thorn in Batman's side. He still did unspeakably violent things, despite the fact that it was an animated program and everybody watched it on a Saturday morning with their bowls of cereal. he still was what you'd expect him to be. Sure, he cracked a lot more jokes, but, you know,
I kind of like that, though. Sometimes it kind of makes, when you have a character who does a lot of joking and being kid-friendly, when they do something not so kid-friendly, I think it hits a little harder.
Yeah, he's made you laugh, and then the next thing you know, you're laughing. Like, oh, he's just blown up an entire skyscraper. Oh, okay, I see. With people inside it. So, yeah.
It's weird how you can get around, like, the censors by, like, not showing people dying, even though it's like, they clearly blew up a building in the daytime. Like, people are dead, and they're like, well, no, you didn't, no, we didn't show anything. It's, that's kind of worse. Now we know nobody made it.
I just wonder how censors do their job. It's just like, yeah, but did you show people dying, though? No?
It's like, nope.
Then let it run. Like, but clearly, that is a building where people live and work. And he's blown it up.
People can explain that to their kids. That's not our job.
Well, and I'm sure that's...
That was one of my favorite parts. Sorry. That was one of my favorite parts at the end of the last season of Legend of Korra, is that there were, like, assassinations and stuff happening. But they couldn't say killed.
Nope.
They were always like, she was done in, or something like that. Like, they could use a euphemism. Mm. And you could watch someone airbend the air out of someone's lungs, but you couldn't say the word kill.
Even though that's clearly
you could say
happening.
Unalive them.
Yeah. Like if I ever saw like a, you know, if I ever saw a child or anything like talking about, oh yeah, you know, that person got done in, I'd be like, excuse me? Sorry? What? What do you mean done in?
What does that mean?
Have you been running? Do you have the mafia teaching you at school? What's really going on right now?
Yeah, see, done in, see, yeah.
Oh man.
So yes.
Hey, quick question on the side. Have you ever played Undertale?
Yes, I've played it. No, I haven't finished it.
Okay.
But I am working on that.
Okay. The reason I ask that, I'm going to skip turn. Sorry, Steph. A new question I want to add in. So there's some feels in that game.
Yes, oh God, yes.
But you haven't finished it, so I'll just ask a question anyway. Mm-hmm. What's one of your most memorable crying moments from fiction?
Let's go with the last one that I had. The last one where I literally blubbered like a baby was the Walking Dead Season 1. The Telltale Games version of it.
Okay.
At the end, Clem and what's his face have what I would consider the most powerful moment in any video game that I've ever played. It literally hit me in the chest. And I think the reason why it did is because Clem looks a bit like my daughter, Nora. And she... I don't know. If for whatever reason, my daughter and I ended up in some sort of like post-apocalyptic situation where I'm dying, I kind of envisioned it happening like that. And
oh Jesus, that's such a punch.
And I thought to myself, you know, this is complete work of fiction. I can't ever envision or ever fathom this actually happening. But it looks like I was staring at myself and my daughter. And the way it was acted, what the two have been through, what they've done through together, they didn't even know each other. They literally just met, just trying to survive, and they got so close. But he protected her like she was his own kid. And I just, when that scene was over, I needed all of the tissues. I needed all of them. Every single one of them.
It was
really, really, really powerful. But that only speaks to how good Telltale Games are at their writing. So good.
For sure. Steph, since it's an inaugural question, I have to post it to you as well.
Oh, man. Probably one of the worst ones. I could tell you about the last time I just ugly cried, which was I was reading a book called The Serpent King by Jeff Zentner, and I knew that that a character was going to die. Like, I could tell just from the tone of the book that someone was going to die, and I was waiting for it to happen, but it still really hit me hard. But one of the worst ones was when I saw the Order of the Phoenix movie, the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix movie, at the end... I had been holding out hope that Sirius Black was going to come back somehow after reading the book. Like, I figured, like, he had fallen through this veil, but he wasn't dead. Like, he wasn't dead when he went through the veil, so he was going to come back from death somehow and, like, rally, like a Lord of the Rings-esque ghost army to help fight the final battle. I had this whole elaborate theory. And then in the movie, when it happened in the movie... he gets hit with an Avada Kedavra spell as he's falling. And I was like, JKR wouldn't have let them keep that in. If it wasn't something important later on, he must be really dead. And I was very worked up about it. Close second would be when Rose and Ten get stuck on the opposite sides of the wall in the season, series 2 of The New Doctor Who. Okay. I cried for a long time.
Hmm. These are some good moments. I'm trying to think. So,
I have.
So that's probably the one where I was. I didn't cry. I don't know if it's just because I haven't been able to recently. But there's like a very, it's like bittersweet sort of thing. But the one that probably got me the most, because like the more I think about it, there's actually a good bit of ones. I mean, Futurama has so many, but I'll probably have to go with that one episode of Fresh Prince. And this one is a throwback for me, but Will's dad comes in and he's never been in his life, and he's like, yeah man, we're gonna do all this stuff. So Will gets all packed up, he's gonna go cross country with his dad, and he's like, hey man, actually got this trip I gotta go on, and couldn't really take a kid, and he just, you know, just kind of just bullshits him a little bit, and Will's like, nah man, it's cool, go ahead. So it's like, you know, like there's no like laugh track or anything, it all goes away. And Uncle Phil's like, hey, you all right? And Will's like, nah, man, I'm good. He goes on like this whole tough speech. He's like, about how he's going to, like,
oh, yes. Do everything on his own. Oh, God, now I know what you're talking about. Oh, yep.
Yeah. And then it has the pause, and he's like, yo, why don't he love me, man? And then Uncle Phil just hugs him so tight. I'm like, eh. And I mean, my dad's been in my life. You know, I live with him, and like, live with my parents. Like, things are going well. So it wasn't like this wasn't like a reflection of something that happened to me, but I'm like, that's so shitty, man. Like, and it was just so well acted, and like the whole rest of the show was like, episode was just kind of goofy, kind of had like that 80s 90s corniness to it, but it's just like, was this just quiet moment, you know? But that's probably mine. And then probably Undertale. I've been watching videos of people watching that scene and crying, so it's kind of, I don't know. It's like a really sweet
thing. I feel like I need to prepare myself for this, because I'm getting close to the end. I'm not quite there yet, but I feel like this moment, and everybody's been talking about it since that game came out, and I was just like, no, I need to see what this life is actually like.
So I think it's just so much that I don't know what hits about it so hard. I think it's because the game's just really goofy and like out there. It's not that it's the most, it's not like it's a very original or novel idea, mm-hmm. but it's more of just like how, like, it just goes from so loud to so quiet, you know what I mean? Mm. And it does like, does some, so I mean, you said you've played through it, so
I have.
So spoilers, I guess, from the very beginning, like the first boss battle.
Yes.
I'm not going to even, okay, people play the game, if or skip a minute ahead, but when you fight Toriel, you want to spare her, but when she gets you to such low health and starts shooting the fire at you, but it can't hit you, like it always, no matter where you go, it goes around you. I was like, oh, this game is the realness. Like, this is, they're enforcing the story through the mechanics. This wasn't like the deepest or most set the world on fire thing, but it was, oh, I can't die right now. Like, she refuses to hit me. Okay, Toby Fox, you made a pretty good game. And just from there on out, like, everything was, and that's what, and half an hour in or so?
Yeah, roughly about that. And I thought to myself, you know what? This game is going somewhere, and it isn't just a, because when I first picked it up, I expected it to be a really fun parody of all the games I used to play on Game Boy back in the day.
Right.
You know, Legend of Zelda, and things of that nature. And I thought to myself, oh, okay, this should be fun. But then I think probably from the moment that you got into the first, not necessarily the first boss battle, but rather the ones that you're fighting, or the meme and the lack thereof, when I realized when you're playing it that this isn't the same kind of game, I thought to myself, okay, I have absolutely no idea what to expect next. And that's how it's continued since I started playing. Undertale is, I can see why it was rated so highly as one of the best games last year, because it is. And it's...
for sure.
But I don't know how else to prepare for this whole emotional punch that is going to be coming at the end.
I mean, I think you can see it coming, but it was, like I said, it's just it's how quiet they did it. You know what I mean? Mm. You'll see it there.
I feel like it's worse to know that something horrible and sad is coming. Like when I was listening to the Hamilton soundtrack for the first time, I was like, I know he dies at the end. I know it's going to be sad. That's literally the only thing I knew about this guy going in was that he died in a duel. So it's going to have a sad ending, and I still ended up like ugly sobbing in my car. My mom thought like I had been hurt or died or something. I was like, I knew I was gonna die, but I didn't know it was gonna be that sad.
I think it's how you frame it, you know, because the act of him dying, I mean, I have no emotional investment in our actual founding fathers because they were a bunch of sexist slave owners. But the way it frames it, and especially with the Hamilton musical, is that there's the whole, you see how he just, his whole life has gone downhill because of things he's done. And he's like, I messed up, man. It's just this. And then Burr, who has just been a dick the whole time, is kind of like, oh, I actually shot my friend. And that moment of realization where they both realized this didn't need to happen, I think that's what really got it for me, was like all the ego had gone away, all the bravado, all the masculinity. It was two guys that are basically, how did we get here and why is it happening this way?
Mm.
And literally 5 minutes ago, we could have both stopped this. And I think that's what really, again, it's a framing. It was a real, the musical, it's so amped up. The election of 1800, so bombastic. And then The World Was Wide Enough is still quieter.
Kind of makes you wonder.
Quiet moments will get you.
Yeah. Kind of makes you wonder if they would have an election like that in these times. Pray that never happens.
If we see Hillary and Donald, no, I guess it wouldn't be Hillary and Donald, but if we see, I guess, Bernie and Hillary, or Donald and whoever his Burr would be, getting in a duel in like January, I will watch that on pay-per-view. Now, I mean, I'll turn it off before they actually shoot, because I'm not a sadist, but the musical part leading up to the duel would be interesting.
I can't see somebody like Donald Trump actually going through with it. I think he would pull out at the very last moment, because he gives me that kind of vibe. I just don't know why.
Yeah.
I think he's...
I can't see him.
He talks. He doesn't push buttons. He just doesn't do that. He's a very manipulative guy. He's a sociopath. He's a big-time megalomaniac. That is all very clear. But he only does this kind of stuff and only shows his kind of bravado because that's the people that he's pandering to, and he knows that he wants something from them. In this case, their vote. So I don't really think he would actually go through with something like what Hamilton and Burr did. I think he would just chicken out, to be honest.
I can see it. So we'll knock two more out. Stephanie, I did two in a row, so if you want to do two quick ones in a row, and we will be a wrap.
Alrighty, go for a quick one. Are you a cat person or a dog person?
Yes.
solid answer.
I do love cats and I do love dogs. I have never owned a dog before, though, so I'm probably at this point more partial to saying I love dogs more, only by virtue that I've never actually had a dog of my own. But I can, this is going to sound really weird, but I've gotten into the idea of when I finally get my own house, to have a micro pig, because I love pigs.
Nice.
I do love pigs. I think they are
interesting.
I think they're amazing, intelligent, fascinating creatures. And I don't like pork because it literally makes me ill. So we get on just fine.
Oh, makes sense. Cool.
Okay. Another not so fast question. What do you do to cheer up if you're feeling down? Is there something you always go to?
Music. Music is the first thing that I reach for. And if it's not that, it's my my pen and pad or my laptop so I can write something. But creative expression or just simply taking in someone else's art, namely music, that to me is the first thing that I reach for. It's more than just something that you do. It's extremely therapeutic.
Nice.
And that's always what I opt for first, without fail. Failing that, then yes, there's probably like a bottle of beer or something like that I can go and get, but I wouldn't recommend that.
Sometimes you need it. Hey, well, that's going to be the end of our rapid fire section. Ha, Joseph, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us, man. We've been Twitter buddies for a little bit now, ever since working on a song, and I knew eventually we were going to have to get you on the show. Oh,
listen, it's been an absolute pleasure and a privilege. Shout out to Overclock Assembled. I see you. Shout out to everybody at Media Diversified. I see you. Shout out to all of the London Massive. Shout out to everybody in Pittsburgh. Shout out.
Hell yeah.
Again, we won't talk about the Eastern Conference Finals. All is forgiven. Just don't let it happen again.
Gotcha. Do you have any social media that you want to give the listeners if you want them to come chat you, look at your work?
Yes. If you are doing the whole Twitter thing, I am at the Oracle, but it's spelt at TheAuracl3 because somebody else took the name before I joined a few years ago.
Bastards.
Yes, and I don't have P. Diddy's money to offer him, so I can go ahead and take the at off of him. So there we are. just gonna have to take the L on that. I do have a blog on Tumblr that I update from time to time, but usually it's just with my photography and stuff these days. So it's called The Altered Realm thealteredrealm.tumblr.com. You can see all of my fanciful imagery things there. It's the same for Instagram at The Oracle, but again spelt the same way that my Twitter handle is spelt. Facebook is None of Your Business.
smart.
let's see. You can also get into my column called Black on Both Sides of the Pond. That's at mediadiversified.com. Do that. We have a whole bunch of really brilliant writers, poets as well.
Very nice.
Go ahead and get into that there. And that probably... Oh, yes. The band. Yes. Christ. The band, Ships Down. Shipsdown.bandcamp.com. You can listen to our demo. It's gotten quite a few good reviews, played on the radio as well. We're really excited.
Very nice. So, very nice. Very cool. Yeah, we'll put all this stuff in the show notes so people can get that. Just, yeah, definitely go visit his work, listen to his music. He's a great dude and a fantastic writer. So.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
For sure, for sure. Stephanie, do you want to knock out our beers?
Absolutely. You can find Dom on at Brother Dom on the tweets and the tumbles. That's with an A and not with a hard ER.
Thank you.
You can find me at The Snow Queer on Tumblr or at Captain Steph on Twitter. Both of us also write for Lady Geek Girl and Friends, which is a intersectional feminist blog. Talk about race, gender, sexuality, that kind of thing, but from a geeky perspective. That is ladygeekgirl.wordpress.com. You can find this podcast on Twitter at CharacterRev with two R's in the middle. You can find us on Simplecast at characterreveal.simplecast.fm. And you can find us on Stitcher. We're still working on iTunes.
Yeah, we are. They have it on lock and key. So, again, thanks again, Joseph, for joining us. We hope you had a good time kicking it with us for a little bit. And,
yes.
Yeah, and until and until next time, we'll see you later. Right.
Thank you, guys, for having me again, and thanks, everybody, for listening. And, go and do great, wonderful things. See, I'm really not made for that whole, I don't know. Yeah, just basically go and be awesome. That's all you can really say at the end of this, something like this. Again, thanks guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yep. And listeners, until next time, we will see you later.
See you later.